Welcome to another episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast, where we interview top sellers and sales leaders to learn the different tips, tricks, and mental strategies that they use to create sustainable peak performance. Let's get rolling. Welcome to this week's episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast. Super exciting guest this week, Sophie Wade, who is a work futurist, international keynote speaker, and workforce innovation specialist at Future of Works consultancy, Flexcell Network. Over 475,000 people, we might even be to 500,000 by the time this episode launches, have taken her LinkedIn Learning courses on empathy and future of work skills, one of which that I've gone through is empathy for sales professionals. Relevant? Definitely. Awesome one for anyone to check out. And Sophie's executive advisory work and transformative workshops help leaders understand and adapt to new business conditions and attract, engage, and retain a productive, multi-generational distributed workforce. It sounds like a lot, but oh my gosh, is that not so perfect for what we deal with in today's day and age? I cannot wait to unpack this more. A little bit of background on Sophie. She got her BA at a little known university called Oxford and an MBA in international business school INSEAD. And she's got a couple of books out. Her second book, Empathy Works, the key to competitive advantage in the new era of work, is coming out here shortly for folks. And so we are going to have such a fun conversation. Everybody's heard me talk about empathy. How do we understand ourselves, understand other people? So to have somebody that's been practicing this, teaching and leading on this for so long, I am so lucky to learn from you. Thanks for joining us, Sophie.
Jordan, hi. It's so great to be here.
I am super excited to learn from you. We got to chat for a few minutes beforehand, and I am just super pumped to hear, how'd you even get here? How'd you get to this spot? And so I'd be super curious, what's been a really impactful lesson or learning for you throughout your life that got you to this point to want to talk to folks about empathy?
Yeah, it's one of the key things really is that I've lived and worked in five different countries by now. And you know what that means is I grew up in England. I'm originally English, and now I'm American as well. But I lived in Hong Kong, actually studied Chinese at university, which is like there's one subject. So I went and I lived in Hong Kong, and part of the time as part of my course, I was in Taiwan. And then I lived in Germany, and I lived a little bit of in Italy. And you know, the key thing for me about living in and working particularly in different countries was you get to experience different cultures. So that's a key thing. And you learn that, you know, all the stuff that I was doing or thought was like, you know, like that everybody lived like that in England was absolutely not the way it was. I traveled a bit in Europe, but when you go to a culture as different as you know, the Chinese culture from England, it really made me realize that, you know, what I know is only what I know. And there are so many other things going on. And then working in different countries, everybody has a very different way of working. So it helped me recognize that there isn't just one way of working. And so that sort of part of it is sort of like being able to look at work and think, oh, maybe there are different possibilities, which has been so much of what I've been doing for the last 10 years. But the empathy piece of it was really like every country I went to, I had to try and work out, like, you know, what's going on here? How do people think? How do people approach things so that I could really, you know, try and be successful there? Can you try and assimilate? So that was a really, really key thing in terms of sort of how I got here to be talking about empathy.
I love talking with folks about travel and having different experiences abroad. I mean, anytime somebody talks to me about, especially seeing, you know, lesser well-off countries, I have some of these memories that flood me of, you know, I took a trip to Morocco and just seeing other people live but yet have tremendous joy, especially, you know, being an American. It's like, oh, this is the only way to find happiness in life and joy. And oh my gosh, I go somewhere else and people have way less than I do. But wow, they seem maybe even happier than most of the people that I see walking down the streets. And they're willing to say hi. And oh, I just love having travel.
It's also very, it's tiny things as well. I sort of, you know, had seen differences around Europe, but then I sort of thought that, like, this sounds really silly, but sort of eating, like etiquette and things like that would be this, like, the same. We'd all have the same thing. And of course, I'm sitting around a table with a bunch of Chinese, and they're all down in their bowls, like, you know, doing, you know, shoveling the rice because that's the better way to do it. And I'm sitting up there all proper with my, you know, straight English back, and like this rice going everywhere. And I look like the idiot. And it was like really basic things like that. And I was like, oh, I have to relearn. I have to really think about like basic things. Oh, for me was sort of basic. That's all changed too. So it wasn't kind of like, oh, you know, there was sort of like the big obvious ones, but some of these really little things. And, you know, if you don't like something that you're eating, particularly when you're traveling around China, you know, you'll spit it on the floor. So you get to restaurants early because otherwise there's lots of stuff on the floor. So it's kind of like, okay, got it.
Wow. I'll have to hold that one in my back pocket. I haven't experienced that part of it yet.
Well, when you're really traveling around like China proper and you know, you go to a restaurant, it's kind of like you don't put it on the table, you don't put it on your plate, it all gets swept up and they sort of cleans. It's not dirty for a long time because it all just gets swept up, but it was just a very different learning experience for me.
Wow, that is fascinating. And I have not spent much time with China or working with Chinese businesses. What's one of the leadership principles you've taken away from your time in China? What's something that stands out to you from there?
Well, that's actually where there are some fascinating similarities between the Chinese and the English, because there's this whole concept of face. And, you know, in England, it's like, you know, stiff upper lip and you don't show emotions. Well, there are quite a few similarities like that. And one of the things that sort of helped me, because it's not a question of being as direct. I mean, I actually am a very direct person. So being in England was like, it wasn't. So you start really trying to read people's faces, which is, you know, to do with empathy. It's like, you know, what are they thinking? Like, are they concentrating? Are they in a bad mood? You know, what's the problem? You know, what's going on? So that was helpful. We're really trying to lean in and ask questions, because if you really don't know someone's culture and experience, you know, you have to ask more questions. And then also, I think, you know, the huge thing in China is about what's called guanxi, which is translated as connections, but it's really relationships. I mean, sometimes it's translated as relationships. And what, you know, that's not about networking. That's, you know, when we do it, if we shake hands on something and we have a strong relationship, that's much more important than the contract that we may have signed, right? It's really, and I don't necessarily want to do business with you, you know, in a Chinese situation, unless we have a strong relationship and we have that sort of bond. And that's really where leadership is now. It's like these relationships, and that's the whole thing about empathy. The more that I understand you, the more that we have shared memories, that we've found the commonalities that really connect us, that's when we can work together well. And that's, so I've learned a lot from those aspects of the Chinese culture.
Wow. That's really, really fascinating. And I feel that there's some tension there as I think about how I've seen sales evolving in the last decade, where it seemed like it used to be all about the, you know, getting out on the golf course, the boys club, all these things where, and maybe I'm a little biased being in tech and I was able to be remote pre-COVID, but How do you see that kind of playing out in the sales environment, of this ability to create relationships, but it not necessarily having to be maybe the golf course outing, or please tell me it is, and I'm happy to play more golf anytime.
I was very interested to see that the data, I can't remember when it came out, it was mid-2021, it was a HubSpot research which came out and said 63% of senior salespeople thought that virtual sales interactions were as, if not more, but which was really exciting to me, because it just gives more possibilities and people don't have to be on the road the whole time, as you're saying. I think look, I think we can learn more about how to have strong relationships virtually. When people sort of say, "Am I, you know, I just want to be in person," I'm like, "So, you know, you didn't have anybody over the last 2 years that you felt really connected with and have really, really good conversations and sort of got to know them more personally?" Of course, I mean, we did so much, and we learned so much. We learned a lot about ourselves, but about our colleagues, and we leaned in and we sort of looked. And of course, you know, I've been asking you about the footballs on the shelf, and I'm curious about the thing, the my core thing. You know, so what? I mean, unfortunately, all the this is my book right here, so I've made it kind of like mean. But the thing is that we can use empathy to learn a lot more about other people when we are asking questions and we're sort of watching people's faces. And the key thing is really trying to sort of connect on all these different dimensions, as well as paying attention to you know, what people's moods are and listening to their voice tones and all those kind of things. When we really pay attention to all these things, it gives us a huge amount of information. So we don't need to spend, you know, 4 hours on the golf course, as fun as that may be. But there are moments to do that. So it's a question of setting it up in a more intentional way. You know, X number of times a year, I need to do something like that. Try and be in person. And in fact, I was talked to a guy who I interviewed, a guy who was head of one particular division at Activision. And he was all tech, all gamer. They actually put his division put on the live tournaments.
Oh, wow.
So they had a very, very, very connected team of about 100. And when the team was smaller, he had very strong relationships. And every year he went on at least one trip, you know, to go and see one of the core team members and do whatever. Like one guy, he said he went hand gliding with, a little dangerous. I mean, I love it. But and so he'd find out what their thing was and he'd do something with them that they both enjoyed. Not just they enjoy, because otherwise it can't really be authentic. But so there's that moment to make sure you are connecting in person. And then, you know, really, you know, doing all the work the rest of the year to make sure that you are, you know, nurturing and leaning into that relationship.
Yeah, I really like that. And I like that you call out it's not just doing whatever the other person wants to do, but it's what is something that you can both mutually connect on. And right. It's not just caving to say like, oh, whatever you want to do, but you actually have a little bit of both inputs right there, I think is really powerful. And so I'd be curious, as you talk about, you know, this future of work and what you see coming up, I'd like to start with the good normally, but let's start with the bad. Like, what do you see a bunch of companies really struggling with or maybe screwing up even as we're really shifting how we work and how we work across these multi-generational organizations?
Well, most companies are struggling right now. And I think it's only natural. We've had a 2-year, very disruptive pandemic, and that accelerated, like the future of work has been coming for a while. It really came in 2020, but it has been coming for a while. We have known it was coming. But there wasn't an urgency. Everybody had enough things to go, partly because things were already starting to speed up, already starting to become less predictable. We couldn't sort of work in the same linear ways and project out 10 years. I mean, it's not possible. And so we were straining against the old ways of working already. Then everything gets thrown up in the air. And then actually we have a chance now to kind of like work out how to move forward. Now, you know, but at the same time, what we want to do is kind of like, oh, let's just like go back to what we were doing because it's going to be easy. And I'm so fed up. We're like this whole thing. I can't, you know, it's tough. So what you have now is this incredible tension is exactly the word between what we were doing, you know, there's no back to go back to, but what can we take from there? And we have lots of learnings from the pandemic in terms of how we did learn to pivot and work in different ways and sell in different ways. I mean, look at, you know, how many people in the sales area would have said, absolutely no way, can't possibly sell, you know, virtually like this and be successful. And how many would have been, you know, proved prove wrong. So we can do different things, and we get really creative, and we work it out, and we, you know, we learn how to do things differently. So it's putting some of, you know, taking some of the more flexible, adaptive sort of things that we can change from the past, put them into a new context, because we need to have that flexibility baked in, and then move forward with those learnings. So it's, I mean, I use the word messy. I don't say that anybody's screwing up or, you know, messing up. I just say it's going to be very, it's very messy, because, you know, any company that you're, no company is going to get hybrid if that's the sort of choice. I mean, being everybody being in the office or everybody being remote, those are the two easiest solutions, because everybody's sort of in the same environment. When you have different schedules and people coming back and forth, and you know, some people may be fully in the office, some may be fully remote, some people in between, it is just more complicated. But the world is more complicated, and the world, the way we're working and the way business is operating, and never mind supply chain disruptions. I mean, like, there are so many things, you know, coming at us from every direction. And so we need to be able to have that flexibility and be adaptable. And that means everybody needs to have that flexibility for, you know, for, so that they can do their best work. So it really takes a lot of patience and trial and error. And obviously, you know, few people are going to get that right to begin with. And so it's just, you know, keep iterating.
Yeah. I love this thought of, you know, learning happens by trying things, and then you actually learn once you try it. It's so easy to sit there and think that we can just learn everything by just reading the book, or, you know, reading history and saying, oh, well, this is how it's going to happen because this is how it happened before. But you actually got to implement it and execute to learn and get that feedback to say, well, here's what we didn't maybe expect to see, or what we didn't look at. You'd said something a few minutes ago that, you know, when I started out in my career, it was like, oh yeah, set like 10-year goals. And yeah. I still debate with folks on, you know, I like having a direction of here's where I'd like to go in 10 years, but knowing how much the world changes every day, it seems like right now. I'm curious, when you're working with organizations and running workshops, and are you talking to them about the next 6 months, the next 2 years? How far out are you projecting or working with folks as you talk about their future?
Well, I can talk like way out, because I'm talking principles and I'm talking about how to work more than what they have to do and the goals that they have to set. I would recommend, I mean, you know, even like performance reviews, it's kind of like go to sort of weekly check-ins, because then you can course correct, because the course needs to be corrected because not necessarily is doing anything wrong. It's just the KPIs may have changed. And if, you know, there's nothing worse than an employee like going gung ho towards a, you know, towards a direction, and that's not where he or she should be going. It's kind of like, you know, it's over here now. So we are dealing in a very, very different environment, but you can say, you know, in fact, my first book was called Embracing Progress. And the reason for that was progress typically is something positive, and it's a sort of destination, but it is not a defined destination. And you have no idea what's going to happen necessarily in between now and there, but you're kind of like, that's where we're going. So that was really like the positive way of, and so that's what I'm always is, you know, if we're trying to get to a place which is, you know, when I talk about empathy in my book, it's really about human understanding. So if we can understand each other and work together better, like that's a principle, it doesn't change, but the more that we can make progress towards that goal and have more productive, you know, interactions and have better collaboration meetings, particularly when we're trying to sort of deal with these gnarly issues that we're dealing with now, that's all, you know, making the workplace more enjoyable, more, you know, more effective. And we can also be, you know, improving our performance simply by enabling each one of us to work in the right kind of environment that suits you versus me. Like you and I are very different people. Who knows? I mean, you may be a morning person, I'm an evening person, you know, whatever. And so adapting for that, you know, all these things can improve the workforce. There are some big changes that I do see happening, but they will take much longer.
Do you want to care to share one of them?
Okay. So ultimately, now this is, it's overall a big change, and it requires changes in laws and that kind of thing. But ultimately, when you everything with the future of work is driven by technology. I mean, there are some societal changes. We now have, you know, there are so many couples, you know, with kids too, who are working, both working because of the economic situation. We came out of the war. It was like, you know, everything was golden. Everything was booming. Now that's not the case. And so that changes when you have kids. Like, you know, if two people are working, you need more flexibility in their schedules and stuff like that. But generally, it's driven by technology, this interconnectedness and moving faster in a pace. And, you know, your competitor implements a technology and it changes your customer's behavior. And then you have to change it. You know, so we keep evolving like that, which means that the situation for businesses are that they have to be ready to pivot. And if you continue to have a very big, stable, full-time employee workforce, that's going to be very difficult. And it's very hard to be competitive. And so it's not that you're, you know, heartless. So if you have a smaller full-time workforce that is stable, and then everybody else is part of that extended talent pool, and those people may have, part-time jobs and then fill in with, lots of clients. They may be freelancers or independent, long-time contractors. But in having a strong relationship, not just with one company, but many companies, they actually have a stable environment. They have stable financial stability, income stability. So rather than somebody who has, you know, full-time job at one organization, and then doesn't know and is worried about, you know, not having, you know, job security, having many clients actually becomes, once we have, you know, a sort of more of these situations and there needs to be some changes in the laws, that is something that I do see as being ultimately where a lot of countries and a lot of the US is going to go, based on the speed at which we're working. And I don't think it's a negative thing, but there are a lot of things that need to change to get there, for it really to be positive and supportive of freelancers and independent contractors in a different way.
Yeah.
And lots of technology folks are a lot of that. I mean, you have amazing technology experts. Like, why would they ever work for one company? It doesn't make any sense. But, for people who don't have those incredibly specialized, you know, amazing skills, you know, there's a lot more that needs to be filled in.
Yeah, I think our systems were just not built to adapt as quickly as technology has evolved. And they were built before the technology was there. And so there's no fault there, but it will be really interesting to see how that moves. I just watched the other night a clip on John Oliver, not totally relevant, but about truck drivers, drivers, and how, you know, there, many of them are 1099 contractors, but the way that the laws, the way that the business systems are set up, are really not conducive to them having a good work environment. And so they have something like 300% driver turnover year, something crazy, where it's like, oh yeah, a lot of people come into the job, but a lot more people are leaving every year. And the system is just not built very effectively for that. And then you see, you know, Fiverr and Upwork and all these other areas coming on that I work with a lot of different folks that have at least some sort of offering on there. And the amount of demand is crazy. I never would have expected it to be that big, but I that's a very interesting thought, thinking about a smaller full-time population and being able to offset it with, you know, additional freelance. And there's also a lot of really cool benefits of being able to be across multiple different organizations. You know, I work with a lot of agencies that support multiple companies, and they've got perspective that goes beyond just what happens inside of their own business, that adds a ton of value.
Yes. And you know, you see how other people are working, how the people are approaching it. I mean, you get a lot more input. And it really is, I think, you know, one of the situations with the truck drivers has been that for a long time, for years, I've been saying, oh my God, all the truck drivers, 3.5 million truck drivers, and there's 10 million people who are associated with that whole industry, you know, they're going to be put out of business because of driverless cars. Then the pandemic comes, a lot of them do actually find other jobs, and I'm kind of like, oh, there are no truck drivers. It's like, okay, so, you know, we need to sort of set this up differently. But I think really, And it's there's a lot to do with skilling and upskilling and how people, you know, and people needing basic technology skills. I read a great article just recently which talked about, but it was basically saying that a lot of people in much lower paid jobs had used the pandemic to be able to do some certification and learn more technical skills. And so they were actually now moving into much more upwardly mobile jobs that they could then, you know, take in a different direction, which I was, you know, I mean, that has been something also that people have seen during the pandemic, that they can take their skills and use them differently, sometimes within their own company. It just was like, okay, you know, Jordan, we don't need that right now because, you know, the restrictions. Try it over there. And you're kind of like, oh, look at that. You know. So I think us thinking differently about work and how we can apply ourselves and what we can do, that's really, you know, those are really some of the ways that we need to be approaching things now, because it is, as you said, like, you know, we can't project using everything from the past. The recent past is going to be the most useful.
Yeah. Did you talk about career transitions happening? The amount of teachers I've seen working to get into SaaS and technology and sales has been right. Just astounding to me. One, that yes, it does make me fearful for the education system, but I've been fearful for that for 10 to 15 years anyway. And, you know, I talk to a lot of folks because I tell them, like, sales today is very much about how do you educate people effectively? How do you help them learn what is the best solution for themselves and take all this information and refine it? And wow, what a great transition for folks that have been pretty underserved as a profession for a long time to actually see them walk and, you know, use the pandemic as this opportunity, which is pretty fascinating. I wanted to pivot a little bit into some of this LinkedIn Learning course that you've put together, especially on empathy for sales professionals, as that is, you know, where I spend so much time. Yep. And you talk a little bit about how do we adapt to how different folks work on our team. And I'd just be curious if you can expand a little bit on how can leaders, especially in sales, leverage empathy to support their teams better, especially as we look at the pandemic and how folks are working today.
So, empathy really is about understanding people. And this is the case for that was very challenging for any manager, any leader, in fact, during the pandemic, because when you're all in the same office, and salespeople aren't often in the same office altogether, but you could get away with not really understanding the difference. You probably kind of went, well, John is, yeah, don't know. John's like really asleep in the morning, like, and Margie, well, you know, don't talk to her like after lunch because she's kind of like, you know. So you kind of knew the kind of projects that people liked. You kind of knew when they were the best or definitely not their best. But you probably adjusted a little bit. Those differences really come out when people are working remotely or not working in the office, where it doesn't really matter. You just kind of like, hey, come on, John, you know, like, what about that? Or, you know, Margie, let's meet. But you actually start doing those adjustments, but you have to be that much more intentional about how you're going to be working with each person. So that's the first thing, is really paying attention to who each person is and how, you know, when they do their best work and don't, and like, don't have job, you know, don't John in a meeting at 8:30 in the morning, even though you are bright and bushy tailed, he is not, and you're not going to get the best out of him. He's going to forget things, whatever. So it's not kind of like being mollycoddling your people. It's how can you help them and you have the best team results by really understanding them. And it goes further than that. I mean, some people are, you know, you give them a milestone, they're golden. And other people just kind of want to check in every now and again, particularly with younger folks who are coming in who need not micromanaging, but learning and sort of understanding the building blocks or options about how they can choose, because they want to have some autonomy about how they're going to do it. So kind of like, what are the different ways that I can sort of approach this? And then have a bit more oversight and guidance as they're growing. So one of the challenges that I do see now where the bar has been raised for managers and leaders is having, you know, having more training, having really having some more training about how to recognize. And so it's, you know, not reading people, really understanding them, but then sort of noticing, like, you know, where they do well, paying attention to the situations where they're not doing well or they are doing, and like shift them towards that or adapt and then work together with them. Because most people have never known, you know, how they do their best work, because we didn't have a choice. We were all kind of like, and obviously you have been, you know, you've been able to work more remotely. And so you probably have long had a better understanding of how you can do your best work. But other people, the pandemic did, you know, sort of highlight those things, and I'm like, wow, I really, you know, I suffer from isolation. So I really need to, you know, have some more conversations with people. Otherwise I just get so lonely. It really distracts me. So, you know, a lot of these things we start learning about ourselves, and that I think is what leaders can really do. And to understand each person, but also help them understand each other. Because, you know, really leaning into, and this is what I do know is about good about HubSpot, is they, you know, they also, you know, use empathy skills, you know, among a team to be able to share skills, to be able to share, you know, learnings, kind of like, oh, well, I had a client a bit like that, and that was really challenging, or I couldn't, you know, I had somebody who I thought was going to, you know, it was going to go well, and then suddenly it didn't. You know, maybe I could, you know, it sounds like you've got that kind of situation, maybe I can help with that. So really trying to use those good relationships among the teams to be able to share ideas and suggestions in those ways.
Oh, there are so many good things in here. And I probably should have asked the question I'm going to start things off here, because I find so many people use the word empathy, and it's mm-hmm. it's easy to use it. I think a lot of people, you know, a handful of years ago were like, yeah, that's too squishy. Like, no, nobody wants it. Now it's like, oh my gosh, there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have watched a course on empathy and sales and things like that. I'm like, wow, crazy. And what does empathy mean to you? And how do I build it as an individual?
So empathy, the way I define it, and, you know, there is more than one, but generally it is understanding somebody else's perspective, like how they see the world. Like, you don't see the same way that I see the world. So me trying to understand that, and then also tapping into how you experience it. So how you feel. But if you think about, like, you know, what you're going through. So it's not just how you see the world, but also how that affects you. Because if I think about your situation, and if I put myself in your shoes, I would have a different reaction in many cases, right? So, and then, you know, that's where, you know, conversations between partners can kind of go like, well, but I thought you were going to do that. Like, well, I'm not you. So the more we can understand, and so asking questions really helps with empathy, because you kind of like, oh, I thought that's how you're feeling because that's how I would have felt. No. So it's really putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, and how you can learn it. It's paying a lot more attention. And, you know, it is a bit, you know, that can be quite a bit of work to begin with, but then you start really noticing. And I do sort of say to people, like, think about, particularly if there's some people that you don't really get, you don't click with them, you haven't shared what your binge watch TV show is and whatever, which you can do, because that can, you know, but does certainly help. But also sort of pay attention to what their kind of like their baseline is. So in the meeting, you know, Mark is okay. So he's in a kind of like typical mood. So that late, and like how he acts, the kind of words that he uses, how he sounds, is his voice really energized or low, or you know, some people are low energy. And is he like, you know, you can see me, I'm like, use my hands all the time. Like, you know, some people don't do it at all. So what's their sort of normal baseline standard operating mode? And then when they're not like that, then you're like, okay, so that's different. Mark is different today. And therefore, maybe I should ask him some more questions and find out what's going on. So it really is kind of like paying attention to other people and then listening to their voice and watching their body language and watching their faces. And even when you're receiving an email, like, we've all received a text. Text is email's bad because it's so, you know, can be very truncated. Text is much worse because it can be even So is that what Jordan meant? Like, so try not to make any judgments, try and make assumptions. And I'm like, huh, rather than firing off some, you know, pithy kind of, you know, sarcastic, like, really? I thought you were going to get that done. Then it kind of going, oh, really, Jordan, is anything going on? Because we had talked about that deadline, you know, so it's really, it's just being a lot more sort of thoughtful and open and asking a lot more questions, really.
I love that it gets asking more questions and it's hard for me, but suspending judgment when you start to see that action, it is so challenging for me to withhold that what I feel is mostly an instant reaction to so many of these areas, to really bring that curiosity. Because I think, you know, as we ask those questions about others, it's so easy for us to say, well, about me, how would I feel? How would I show up in those situations? That actually really gives us the ability to understand what it might feel like for somebody else going through a similar experience. And I think it's so critical for sellers, for leaders to be able to adapt to, because we are done with the area of the like pushy, slimy salesperson, is my perspective.
Yes. And I think the other piece of that is, there are many people who I think do try and understand when they're selling more than they do try and understand their team members, or, you know, as a leader, you know, they're listening to the people on the, you know, outside, but when it comes to their own team, they don't do the same. And I think that's where you lose a lot of benefit that you could have from extending the same curiosity. And I think, you know, from what I understand, because I did a lot of research to do that particular course and talk to a lot of salespeople, and it really seems that there has been a huge amount of change, which I do explain in the course, in the sales field, that now, you know, because we have so much information on our phones and through the internet, that you know, if I'm choosing a new CRM tool, for example, by the time I get to you, I have asked lots of people, I've done lots of research, I've got a top three list. And when I'm coming to you, you really need to connect with me because I'm that much further along. You don't have all the information. I don't have to kind of go, Jordan, tell me, because I have no idea. And then you can go, you know, you're like spoon feeding me with whatever you want to say. That's not where we are now. And that's what's really raised the bar for salespeople, is that you know, the person who's coming up to them has a lot more information, understanding. And so that, you know, this is where it, you know, the nuances of empathy really help.
Yeah. Oh, that is so good. And I think that's really where we get to the key of, you know, what is really most important to these individuals that we talk to, and what do they care about, and what are they trying to solve for? I think those are really, really awesome points. I think I'm going to go with a couple rapid fire questions for you here.
Go for it.
As we wrap ourselves up. And this one may not be, this one may be too long of an answer, not rapid fire. So feel free to expand a little bit, but
Okay. What
do you see companies doing right that are retaining their employees as we see this whole great resignation happen?
Focusing on culture. Culture connects people wherever they are. And the easiest way to do that is to have something which is lived, spoken about and lived every day. And it could be, you know, and being inclusive. If you don't have a really defined culture now, then, you know, have an inclusive, you know, get all the employees, try and work out like, what are the five words, how you would describe it to someone else, but really coining and understanding what that culture is, because that will connect people wherever they are, and be able to help identify somebody coming into the organization. Like, is this, you know, is do I feel good here? Is this the kind of, are these the values that I have that I share with other people? And then so it really helps. And it's about fitting values, not you know, backgrounds or education or whatever. So that is where people who are succeeding, and some of the key values that need to be integrated there are in open-mindedness. And having a trust-based culture, those two with empathy, like, and inclusive, because, you know, when you have open-mindedness and inclusion and empathy are very close together, because if I'm trying to, you know, understand how you see the world, you know, I need to include everybody, and having trust based, because trust is the sort of the foundation for all good relationships. And that's what, you know, will help you have trusting relationships with the customers, but also having these strong relationships with your employees and your team members and your peers. And that's the real focus, is because everything basically sort of radiates out from that.
Yeah, I love that. Having a strong values driven culture, team oriented, trust. I think trust is the foundation of all good relationships, as we talked about earlier. And then, you know, I think that all leads through empathy and through the ability for us to make authentic connections and not have to show up at work as a totally different person than I am at home.
Right, right. That sort of two-dimensional cutout, like, okay.
Yeah, it's like we're beyond three. We are crazy as humans. We've got these emotions and feelings.
And if we don't practice empathy, it's very hard to deal with that. And you kind of like, but I can't deal with all of these people, like every dimension of them, you know, and people don't have to share everything. Just want to say, we don't have to share everything. And you watch kind of like, oh, maybe I said too much. Won't to say any more about that. So being thoughtful about that, but the more that we need to understand each other, like we practice so much more empathy in our personal lives than we've ever practiced at work. And that's fine. We just need to change that.
And what would you say to somebody that says empathy doesn't belong in the office?
Try and hire someone. No. Because typically it's the younger generations who they also recognize, more than many older generations in the workplace, that things have changed and are much more complicated and much more challenging. I mean, that we have so much, you know, anxiety and with Gen Z terribly, millennials have also had a lot more anxiety because the world isn't very, it's evolving. I mean, we've had a lot of instability with the pandemic and tragedy and all those kind of things, but the world is moving faster. And without that really sort of strong anchoring, stable base, anxiety is going to happen. And so, you know, that's where this human connection becomes so important, because things aren't as stable, because they are evolving, and therefore being able to help ground people with these strong values and connect people wherever they're working from, these become really important. So, you know, I would say, you know, without that human understanding, it's going to be hard to hire and retain people and have them engaged in the more challenging work that we're dealing with now.
Yeah. And I think so much of what I talk about with folks is around mental health, well-being, resilience, burnout. And, you know, I haven't gone too specific into that topic today, because I think this is the foundation that, to your point, permeates all of that. It gives us the ability to say, oh, if my manager, if my leaders can show up and understand me and understand where I'm coming at from, where I'm coming from today, understand my strengths, understand, you know, where I can focus, where I can do my best work. Well, that's how we maintain mental health, well-being, resilience at its core. But because I have to ask,
because then I feel comfortable speaking up and actually saying to you, hey, Jordan, you know, I'm just like, I'm really sorry. I know I was supposed to, you know, meet that deadline, but I just really, really having a bad day. And then, you know, I would feel comfortable saying that, because if not, it's just going to go wrong in all kinds of ways, because I won't feel comfortable saying it, but you know what, you'll be angry at me. That makes it even worse. You know, the whole thing, you know, goes pear-shaped.
It's so true. And so then I've got to ask one of my mental health questions then. Sure. What's one way you refresh or renew or fill up your cup?
I eat chocolate. No, I mean, that's stupid.
It's okay.
I have two dogs, and they have so dogs have really, well, these two dogs have really good energy, and they get me up and they get me out. And just having that exercise piece of the day that I have to get up and take them around the block, that is obviously just good for clearing my head and just, you know, not being sat stuck in one seat for 10 hours or more a day. So
I just used that example with somebody today with my dog. So I totally resonate with that, Sophia, and I love it. I mean, I could talk to you for hours about this these topics, and luckily I had the opportunity to sit and watch you talk about it on LinkedIn already. So I already felt like I know you, but talk to us. Where should folks find you? Where should they follow you? Give us the rundown there.
So my book, Empathy Works, is coming out May 3rd, but if you pre-order it, you can also get a sort of free session, free live webinar session. You can ask me any question you want. But sophiewade.com is where there's a lot of more information about the book. FlexCell Network is my company, but my Twitter handle is @SophieWade, because Sophie is actually my middle name. So Twitter's handle is @SophieWade. And LinkedIn, I share a lot. And I share a lot of articles on Twitter, all kinds of things about how to think. So I'm trying, and there's also my podcast, which is Transforming Work with Sophie Wade. All the things I do, I'm really trying to share information that's useful to help navigate the way forward. That's sort of how I use my channels. I hope you find what you need. And if not, please reach out to me in one of those channels. And I'm always happy to answer questions, because we're going through a lot right now. There are a lot of questions to ask.
There are a lot of questions to ask and a lot to learn, as you know, we're in some newer uncharted territory. And so for folks thinking about the future, thinking about how do they show up, and knowing that your Empathy at Work course, I think you told me, dropped, you know, March of 2020, was so timely. Being in front of that, just what a blessing. So Sophie Wade, thank you so much. Folks, check out links in the show notes to learn more. And until next time, make today great.
It's thanks to help from listeners like you, this podcast can continue to grow and help others. If you found anything helpful in today's episode, please take a second, share with a friend, and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast today. Thanks.